Welcome everybody to another workshop with the Pacific Novel. Welcome everybody to another workshop with the Pacific Novel Project. I am your host Jason, along with my co-host Steve.
Heyo.
And if you've been here before, you know the drill. We're going to talk about our books and workshopping them, and go through what we edit and why we edit them, and just trying to spur on a conversation about writing and editing. And this is our 14th, going into our 14th month of this. And how's it going?
I think it's going great. I mean, we don't really have many subscribers to speak of, but I mean, I have fun chatting about the stuff with you and doing the show. So, hey, I'm here.
We're doing great. That's what counts.
Indeed. 14th show, and tomorrow's the 14th. How about that?
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Happy Valentine's, everybody, even though you're probably listening to this like a week or two after Valentine's.
Happy corporate shill day.
You bring everything down, man.
Hey, man, it's not my problem. It's a corporatized holiday.
So what? What difference what day make flower you buy flowers on?
It's just so superficial.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm obligated. I got to go do this. Blah. I don't know. I just find it's more meaningful like on any other given day, at least in my opinion. But, you know, yeah.
Well, doing something nice for your honey is always meaningful. But, you know, sometimes we have busy lives and we forget stuff. And then we got this day. You know, along with your, in addition to Christmas and your birthday, and say, hey, I'm thinking about you and I appreciate you.
Right. And that's a great thing. It's just, I don't know. If the only day you do it is Valentine's Day, it's just totally contrived.
Yeah. Well, then you're just a shitty partner.
True. True. And yeah. And if you do it more than just Valentine's Day, then good job, guys and girls.
So about birthdays, like every day is a birthday. There must be a million people out there with my birthday. Are we all corporatized?
No, because not the whole entire country is expected to buy you a birthday gift.
Valentine's Day in other countries? I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I imagine maybe some people observe it, but maybe not. I really have no idea.
And if you're familiar with the show, that you know that Steve hates everything.
I do not hate everything.
That has to do with selling stuff.
Well, I just think there's a fine line.
All right. Love knows no line, Steve.
Okay. The nice platitude.
He's like, okay. Fuck love. Fuck love.
Love stinks. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, love stinks. All right. Yeah. What else would we do on this show besides workshop?
Sidebars, like we just did. And that was fun. We do bring your own book club, which is under the banner of Pacific Novel Project. And we do kind of special episodes along with the bring your own book club.
The book club is for patrons, just a couple bucks a month. And you get our take on the novel of the month. I just uploaded Kazuo Ishiguro, The Buried Giant. We're about to record The Road by Cormac McCarthy. So that'll be up in a couple weeks.
Which really enjoyed that book, by the way.
Oh, yeah, the book was great.
Yeah, so much better than Buried Giant. I want to go bury that book.
The buried book.
Yes, bury the buried giant book. We could do it with Arbor Day. You plant a tree on a copy of Buried Giant.
The Buried Giant, yeah, which is made out of trees or some wood product. I guess trees aren't the only wood product.
True, true. But yeah, I think it would work.
All right, so we have a slightly different format. We're experimenting with something new. Instead of workshopping both of our stories in a workshop, we're just going to workshop one of our stories. We're still going to do it every 2 weeks. Because consistency, even if it's slow, it's progress. And we're hoping this will give us cut down the time of the podcast a little bit, because sometimes, especially if we both turn in a bunch of pages, it can take a long time, and give us more time to add stuff and edit stuff, because unfortunately this isn't our job. We have regular jobs, and trying to maximize the use of our time to use our creative juices. This week's me.
It is, with the untitled project story, and I'm really curious as to like what the name is going to end up being, but you know,
I'm curious too.
I bet. Okay, so the last we left off, we got a little more acquainted with Hardwin artist Ardenson, the girl that he found at the crash site of the meteor. We got a little introduction to the post-war world they're in, where they've killed their gods and kind of instituted them, I guess, themselves into like the masters of their own destiny, would you say?
They didn't kill the gods. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I mean, but kind of just said, nah, we're not going to believe in you guys anymore. I mean, you know, as far as like within like the larger society, but I mean, you still have people that are like, yeah, I'm all about the gods, which is cool. And I would totally see that being a thing. I mean, you'd always have like a pocket of people that are like, no, we're down with these gods. Okay. So we end up going with Hardwin and the girl and Clyde go back home. Hardwin checks the house to make sure nobody had been around. And this is after they had went and visited
John's.
Yeah, John's. I was looking for his first name.
Randall.
Randall John's, yeah. Big hoity-toity landowner who has his nose in the air and a stick up his ass. I don't like him already. So I'll be hating him through the rest of this book, I'm sure. And he had some mysterious people with him that had a carriage with a mysterious symbol of the sun on it. So these people kind of set Hardwin off on a road of unease, if you will. And that's why he was checking his house out when he got home, and everything seemed to be okay. And you had we ended up with a very endearing scene. The girl curled up on Hardwin's lap, and he was stroking her hair and realized that he truly did care about this young girl enough that he would be willing to sacrifice himself for her. We'll see if it comes to that. It's anyone's guess, except for Jason's.
Yeah, there's a lot of this is my guess too.
Oh, okay. So, including Jason's.
You don't know. I probably don't know.
Hey, it's possible, man. We'll just run with it. Okay, so we start in section 3. We're on bottom of page 49. Hardwin wakes up to somebody saying his name. At least that's what I get from the italics, is that somebody's telling him to wake up. He wakes, and he feels like there's a danger around him, like a danger that's going to come at like any moment. So he's already in, like, he wakes into like a fight or flight response. I liked the detail of how meticulously crafted the shutter was. Measure twice, cut once kind of guy. I mean, maybe even measure three times. But just how it was so perfectly fit within the window seal that, I mean, it kept out rain, it kept out, and actually kept in heat fairly well. And I mean, if you're talking about like a pre-modern society, I mean, almost to the point of like, what would you say? Like, medieval.
Yeah. Medieval times.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing to have shutters that will keep in your heat. So I liked that detail about them, and it kind of gives you a little bit of information on Hardwin and how maybe detail oriented this guy is, or how how his work ethic is, or maybe just how much he is about like, okay, this is mine, so I'm going to be like extra careful with it. But maybe he's not with other people's stuff. We don't know. We're working up to it though. Okay. Page 50. There's the scratching sound that comes and he dismisses it. Then he hears it again. He looks up. There are two sliding bolts that secure the shutter closed. Just from how I feel oriented in this room, looking up, is this kind of like a skylight, or is this a window?
It was a window above his head, like, you know,
okay,
against the wall, headboard above his headboard.
Ah, okay. So that would definitely be looking up. Okay. Because I was like, well, if it's over to the left of him, maybe he's, wouldn't he just look over? So yeah, the up thing. And it's possible I missed something with the headboard. A little further down the page, Arnesen had forgotten to secure, though he was certain he had not forgotten so ill feeling he was the previous night. Sentence could use some attention. I wasn't real clear on what it was trying to say. I think there was maybe a word left out or a typo in there, or both.
Oh, yeah. That all sounded awful.
Right? Yeah. It happens. It happens. That's why we do this. For those of you, you know, that are listening at home.
Anywhere. Hey, we're on Google Play. You can listen on your phone, on the train, in your car.
You can take us with you. Okay, so I liked the idea of these like pincer devices, device that was able to slide through like just this millimeter. I mean, down to like the smallest millimeter between these two pieces of shutter, like just meticulously like move these bolts, and I think it even mentions it like how long this person had been at this, trying to just remove these two bolts with this with this thin little tweezer like device. And then I think there was just a word missing in this sentence here. All the room, the space between the shutters and the frame would allow. I think there's just something missing there. It read awkwardly to me.
Okay.
I was surprised he wasn't out of bed by now. But I guess he was like wanting to be quiet.
My thinking was he didn't want to move and give anything away.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I just, for some reason, I was under the impression he like might have gotten out of bed yet. I mean, it didn't say whether he did or not. But I think that was me projecting myself into the story and going, blah, 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 I'd be out of bed, blah, you know.
Yes, I'm moving.
Right? I'd be out of bed with my Batleth. Rah.
Different between an amateur and a pro.
True, true. But I want glory to this house. Kapla! All right, 51. This is in reference to the person that's trying to get these shutters open. The discipline of this artist was admirable. And I like this access to Hardwin's thoughts on the potential burglar, like, as an artist. Like, okay, I could, you know, this guy's kind of admirable. You know, I mean, this guy's got some, what's the word I'm looking for?
Skills, moxie, gumption.
All of that, but he's also determined. I mean, that takes some determination to go, okay, I'm getting in these shutters or bust, dude. And then the rooster crows. The dog wakes up. He grabs his sword, hisses out of the scabbard, and he lifts it towards the window. And as the shutters are pulled open, a man comes diving in, impales himself on the sword, and then Arnesen rolls him to the left. The guy slides off the sword. And another man comes in dressed in black clothing. So these guys are like, you know, cat burglar style, all dressed in black. And he gets this attacker in the throat. And the attacker falls. And then he grabs the shutters and slams the remaining bolt into place. So he's bought himself probably a couple minutes. This is, we are on page 52. Okay, so he grabs some water skins, gets the girl, and the dog's with him. He carries the girl down, and then he jumps behind them and pulls the cellar door closed. Yeah, it needs a little work there with the language. So the dog's waiting in the corner. He's barking. He's shushing the dog. He reveals this secret passage that he has, and that he pretty much dug himself. But he didn't spend as much time as he probably should have on it, which I think he even comments on. He's like, I don't know how I'm gonna, really be able to navigate through this thing. So he ends up with a dilemma. He either sends the girl first, so he can close the entrance to the tunnel, or he goes first, leaves the entrance open. So he can open up the trap door on the other side. So definitely not making things easy on him, which I like that. It's a good moment, good spot for a dilemma like this to have, and it kind of increases the tension of the scene. 53. Something burned his lungs. There's something missing. That's burning. I don't know if it was the cold or what, but yeah. Anyway, something's missing there.
Yeah, no, it's supposed to be the outhouse.
Okay. That made me just go, ooh. further down the page. Still on 53. The tunnel ended at a pit, and the air stung his eyes. The dog and the girl whined. The pit, about 4 feet down, was full of feces and urine. He could hear insects buzzing and see the stark white larvae churn over the surface of the waste in the dim light. They're crawling towards a poo pit. I was just like, okay, yeah, that's pretty gross. And it's like he knew, and it even says he knew the pit was half full because he had dug it. So yeah, so he knew the whole time going into that cellar, man. He's like, oh, I gotta go climb through poo.
Yeah, over the poo.
Yeah, and the girl's just like, ah, da, 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 escape, escape, escape. Oh, poo.
Wait till the next edition.
Oh god. Do I want to know? Well, I'm going to find out anyway, but all right, page 54. So I like the consistency with the girl. Hardwin, they get to the outhouse, and he lifts up the box that he uses to sit on and stuff. And he climbs up and out, and he asks the girl if she can pick up the dog, and she tries. And then she stops, and then she tries again, and then she's able to do it much easier. And I noticed there's a consistency with the girl in a couple other spots where, like, she isn't able to do something right out of the gate. But after, like, she stops and, like, maybe, like, collects herself or refigures something, she's able to, I don't know, maybe draw upon something to make it happen. And this isn't like the first instance where I kind of was like, oh, okay. So, I mean, maybe I'm applying too much to the finder at a meteor crash site, and like she can like do things after she can't do them. Kind of like specialness to this girl, but I kind of felt that maybe there's something going on here.
In that particular instance, I was thinking a blue healer is a kind of a small dog, but freaking thick and meaty under all that fur and heavier than it looks. So that's kind of why she goes to pick him up and doesn't put that much effort into it. And then she's like, whoa, looks at him like, dude, what is up with you?
Okay.
And then this time kind of gathers her strength and picks him up.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I'm still kind of just running on like uncategorized canine. I don't think in the story it refers to the dog as a blue heeler.
I just describe what a blue heeler looks like. I don't actually call it that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, all good.
Although you figured it out because you commented on it that it was a blue heeler.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I'm guessing my description worked. Unless you don't know shit about dogs, then it'll just be a blue dog with black spots.
Right. Yeah, actually, blue heelers, they actually have a really pretty coat. And yeah, it's actually varying levels of kind of blue in the fur. Yeah, beautiful dogs, man. I've always really liked them and border collies.
Yeah, my grandparents had a blue heeler. It was a great dog.
Yeah, I always wanted a blue heeler, but they're so expensive.
Yeah, and it needs to be outdoors too. Like it needs to be doing stuff. They had like a 5-acre farm, and that thing would, if the cows or the chickens got out, I mean they never even trained it for a day, and that thing already knew how to herd stuff back into their pants.
Yeah, I can see how a dog like that would definitely need room to run. Border collie too, man. I mean, not a super big dog, but definitely needs room to run. I had a border collie once, and it was a rescue dog, and I think just the abuse was just beyond salvageable, because no matter what, I could not get that dog potty trained. I could not get the dog potty trained.
Yeah, I had a shepherd like that once. It was sad. The dog was so messed up.
Really sad, man. Ended up giving her back to a no-kill shelter. And yeah, I just didn't know what else to do with her.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. Sadness. At least this dog's okay.
Yeah. So far.
Clyde, not so much. After the outhouse, we come to the barn. Hardwin's like, oh, they don't have a guard at the barn. Well, I wonder why. And so they go inside and they find out Clyde's dead, so no need for a guard. But it also shows with them killing Clyde that like the people that have invaded his farm, his house, are not just like, you know, low-level goons. I mean, they actually took into account possible escape, so they killed his horse. Didn't take any chances. They did kind of come off as noobs in this part. This is 55, like halfway down. Hardwin comes across a dark-skinned man and 7 horses. And the guy looks no older than 17. Dude's just kind of like either upset he got stuck with shit detail or just doesn't really care about the job that he was given to do. And Ardenson sneaks up and snaps his neck. So now Hardwin and the girl and the dog have 7 horses.
That's right.
Didn't the lady coming around the mountain have 7 horses?
I think she has 6.
Oh, 6 white horses. Yeah, that's it. 6 white horses. And then there's a typo at the top of 56 where Hardwin Ardenson sees himself and yells into the yells down the hole to his comrades. So yeah, I was like, ah, kind of chuckled. It was one of those find and replace typos.
Yeah.
And so they are off with 7 horses, man, and they're riding to Can Derwin's home. Hardwin still does not know the fate of Can Derwin since he saw him last. I thought that was a good logical progression. I thought it made sense for him to go to Derwin. So, yeah, totally worked. And then there's another find and replace error with Hardwin.
Yeah, obviously I need to do another find and replace.
At this point...
What's the worst that could happen?
All your Hardwin Ardensons turn into something else. I think you find and replaced yourself out of find and replace.
You got to do it the old-fashioned way for now.
I think so. I've been going through and highlighting stuff for you, though, if I come across stuff that I'm like, whoa, I've just been like highlighting or whatever. So that way it'll stand out. And so they're riding up to Tan Derwin's place, and there's no smoke from the chimney, from most likely cooking breakfast or something like that. There's no smoke from the blacksmith's forge. He slowed to a halt, turned to the girl, and he's like, "Stay alert." Dismounts off his horse, and she's like, "I'm not staying here." Blah blah blah, and follows Hardwin into the house. There's some overturned furniture and plants and a little bit of blood on the wall. He didn't dig too deep for hiding places, and the rest of the house seems like it was peaceful. No sign of struggle in the other rooms, which is kind of interesting. So they must have all been caught like out in the main room, if I had to guess. Page 57. Hardwin sets the dog off to go sniff people out. I'm just wondering if he uses like a piece of clothing or something for scent, or if he's or if his dog's just like, go find people.
Okay.
I was just wondering. Probably not a big deal, but my brain went there. For what it's worth. So his dog finds a smell behind a door, does like the pointer thing, as dogs will do, and then backs away as he'd been trained to do. So dog is a very well-trained dog. And then, let's see, Hardwin Ardenson stood quietly watching the door, wondering if whoever was in there was someone in there now. And I was like, it kind of confused me. I was just like, is what's being conveyed here, is that like someone's still alive in there, or?
No, I don't know.
I don't know. Okay. Moving on then. 58. There's a capital rod. There's a couple capital rods on this page. Now I have to ask, like, down middle of the page, there's some dialogue. No, Jerry answered. This is Rod. Is that character's name actually Rod?
Yeah.
Okay. That works. So Hardwin gives them a blessing, sends them on their way with a letter and two horses. No, four horses. And no? Yeah. No. Let's see. They keep two. So we would have sent them with five horses.
I don't know. They had seven horses, right?
Yeah, seven horses. I think they keep two. And they send them with, I think, five to give three to the family they're sending them to, and for the boys to keep one apiece. Because these are both boys that were in indentured servitude. I think Piper is a really fitting name for the girl. Totally works. I mean, it's either that or Barefoot Bertha. You know, I think Piper works better, though. Okay, yeah, this is page 60 is where he writes the letter. See, you're in luck. I have brought all these fine animals. I have also said in the letter, you will be bringing four horses. Two are gifted. I think that should be five horses unless they take three horses. The other three for...
I just changed the gift for the landowners from two to three.
Okay, cool. But I think you want to change this too, because they'll be bringing five horses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Then you're all good, man. And I'm kind of wondering about, wouldn't the horses have brands or symbols on the saddles or saddle blankets or...
Not in Stealth Ops.
I guess not in Stealth Ops. Yeah. Hey, that's fair. That's fair. And I guess this would be, yeah, kind of equivalency of a stealth op. There's some unsavory Cardinal Richelieu type people doing their Richelieu kind of things.
Goddamn rich people.
I know, right? You know what? Nobody has ever made $1 billion ethically. I'm just going to leave it there. Leave it right there.
I have no evidence to refute that on hand, so I'll accept it.
All right, cool. And I thought it was really cool of Hardwin to do that for the boys. Kind of establishes him as kind of a hero type. He didn't give him his own horses, but still the gesture of like, hey, have owning horses is going to change your lives, kids. Enjoy. Okay, let's see here. A little bit further down, we got a bunch of capital rods.
I'm guessing when I get this from Justin, it'll just be a page full of penises.
Page full of penises, yep. Most likely. Oh, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Let's see here. 62. Hardwin Arnonson bent to pick up a rock, but the girl, Piper, he thought of her as now, touched his arm. She raised her pipes to her lips and blew several sharp notes. The dog came to attention like a soldier. Hardwin Arnonson even thought the dog was going to raise a paw and salute for a moment. Then after a single bark, the dog turned and ran to catch up to the boys. And this is when he tries to get the dog to go with the boys, because where he's going, he doesn't know if, A, the dog's going to be safe, B, the dog's going to be welcome. So I think that was a good move. There's problems up ahead. There's a storm coming. Next paragraph, Hardwin Arnonson made sure the boys were well on their way before he prepared to leave. Hardwin Arnonson told the dog to watch and brought the girl inside. And I was like, I thought the dog went with the boys.
Yeah, you thought correctly.
And then Hardwin Arnonson's patience was I think there's a wrong word or a missing word.
I think that's supposed to be beginning, not bringing.
Beginning would make a lot more sense.
Beginning to ebb as each new clothing item was yanked off their racks.
Yes, do that. Okay. All right, 63. And then here's the dog back again, standing dutifully on the front porch. I mean, I love that the dog's dutifully standing on the front porch, but he's not supposed to be there. And then I highlighted these examples of the capitalized the city. I just highlighted them to make them stick out, so that way they'd just be easier to notice later. See, 64. There were also parks and fountains scattered around the lower end where people walked and picnicked. There were even several small theaters where plays were performed. And this is kind of like an info drop before we get to the city, or before Hardwin gets there. And I was just wondering if I like the world building, but I was kind of wondering if like some of this stuff could we get to see this as Hardwin and the girl make their way through parts of the city? Because it kind of felt telly.
Okay.
And then a little bit further down the page, he took the girl's reins that she appeared to never had been bothered to use. And I'm sure it's the reins of the girl's horse, but this made me think of like a toddler leash. So yeah, I was like, oh, that's funny. All right, 65. I like this idea of kind of like the maple sugar cotton candy stick thing, with the recipe and all that, and like incorporating like this thing in later when you find out like how you want to frame it in the prose. I think it's a cool idea. And then they're in the city. They're like going up, and they're kind of like walking down this road with like merchant stands, and the girl runs up and she grabs like this stick of like what would be like a sugar syrup of.
Yeah, it looks kind of like just strings. You ever seen like those fancy gilded swords, the cross guard, the guard hand guards on them?
Yeah, like a rapier.
Yeah, it's kind of like that on a stick. If you see pictures of them,
okay.
It's not like quite. It's not like cotton candy. It's just like strings wrapped around the stick, but they're not like tightly wrapped around it. They're like a kind of like a ball.
And then this guy tries to rip Hardwin off by trying to charge him like 10 coppers. for something that should be like three coppers, but he ends up like paying six because Hardwin's like, I'm gonna eye dagger you. And the guy's like, okay, six coppers. I look forward to seeing what money name you come up with later. Cause yeah, words are fun. especially when you got to make them up. All right, 67. I didn't really have much on this page. And this is, let's see, he puts the girl back on the horse and they're kind of going, and Hardwin actually realizes like, oh, damn, I'm hungry too. He gets some pork, she gets some honeydew, and they retire over like in the shadow of one of the city walls, leading to the next like tier of the city, if I kind of like oriented myself correctly. Because like the city is like in different tiers, kind of, because it's like built in like the side of a mountain or hill or something like that.
Kind of like when you see those orchards or farm agricultural things in hilly countries, and they're all on these like different levels cut into the side of the mountain.
I think you did fine with the description of that, because that's pretty much kind of like what I had in my head. And then 68. You really get your first sense, I mean, like, hard evidence that, like, really some shit is going down. Ken Derwin and his family are missing for whatever reason when Hardwin and the girl and the dog and the horses get there. But it's in this moment where Hardwin and the girl find Can Derwin and his sons, and they're like hanging from the gallows. It was gallows, right?
Yeah, from the gallows on the wall.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, cool. So I know, like hanging from the wall could be like, you know, kind of like pinned to the wall, like crucified style, but I was seeing gallows in the way that it was described. So all good, man. I think it's fine. So he goes to shield her eyes from like seeing this, and she's like, "No, don't shield me from this." And so he kind of like is kind of like, "Okay, fine." And she has a very displeased and disgusted response to these bodies hanging above them. I found was really sad. Because it's pretty harsh to get hung for, like, not actually doing anything wrong. Yeah. You know? I mean, they were basically political sacrifices or whatever. Theological sacrifices. However you want to. We'll find out. And then they're up, like, on the next tier at this point. He ignored the cries of merchants. Whose carts were toppled, the glares of other more courteous riders, heat swelled through, a battle lust he hadn't felt in years. These two sentences are kind of jarring.
Okay.
I was like wondering like what's bringing on this battle lust feeling. And I make another comment later about it. On a page coming up about like if there's like some aura in the city or some magic at play that is what's the word I want to use here that's like
enchantment,
kinda enchantment, more like the power of suggestion.
Mm.
But like in like kind of like an aura or spell or something like that. That's like hanging in the air.
Yeah.
Page 69. So he goes to this inn that's supposed to be like known for like being like the order's place of like doing their thing. And there's a passage from this inn into kind of like what they're kind of like inner sanctum kind of thing.
Yeah. Is that a question? Or?
Yes. Yes.
It's an inn. It's got a stable and stuff, but there's like a door, like a big door, like you can walk a horse through or drive a wagon through. And it's got a smaller door inset into that. And that's what he rides up to.
Okay. Okay. And I liked the description of it. There were no doors on the outside, and the only windows were on the second story and darkened. A gate was set in a wooden wall that extended from one corner of the inn to the wall. He knocked hard on the gate twice. A small window opened near his knee, and a face, one too young to be manning the gate, appeared. I like the description and the unexpected person who answers. Because again, strange things are afoot for Hardwin. He's all, "What's all that banging? What do you want?" the young man asked. "I see the respite of your halls. I seek the respite of your halls," Hardwin Anderson says. "So, who are you?" "I'm Sir Hardwin Ardenson," he said, his teeth clenched so tight the muscles directly under his temples pulsed. Yeah, and this is where I made that other comment. It's like he walked into a bad aura that seems to be contagious. There's, you know, the whole war lust, feeling like violent, anger kind of more prominent than other feelings. And then the proper reply of the guard should have been, "True respite is found only in the heart." Then there would be an exchange of signs and whether he would enter. And then he just gets, "I don't know who that is," the guard said. "You got proof?" So our Hardwin like shows him his sword, right? The etching of the bull and the horns. And he comes back with, that's fine work, but it doesn't tell me who you are. It's just like, damn, this kid's a dick, man. So he's like, so Hardwin's like about to like, I swear, just like stab this kid's like face through the little door down at like knee level. He's just gonna like brah, shove his sword through it. Just, brah, brah. He ends up getting stopped by the corporal Dugan that was out with the crew that was harassing Kandurwin's boys at the meteor crash site. So this guy stops him and he's like, "Hey, not here. Come with me." So he leads him through a different part of the city, and they end up coming to a different inn. I really didn't have much of anything for comments on 70, 71. They come into like this like super poor part of the city, and there's just like this like sea of children, starving and desperate beggars, four-wheel drive, the whole real deal, right? So they're just getting like bombarded by these kids and stuff. And I really liked this description. Let's see here. Yeah. Dugan pummeled the children with a large hand, swung it back and forth like a scythe, sweeping the children away. But then I also like this other image, and the wording that conjures it is, the younger man may as well been sweeping away the water in the sea. And it really just kind of goes to show like how desperate these people are, and how desperate the situation is. And I get the feeling that like even Hardwin's like, you know, there was poor people before, but this is ridiculous. I kind of felt like somebody in that city that is like has the power to do something should have read a modest proposal by Jonathan Swift. But this world probably doesn't have a Jonathan Swift or a modest proposal.
Nope.
Okay, down to 72. So they pass through another merchant bazaar where everything's closed except for the food mongers. And they end up coming to another inn called the Golden Pasture. Didn't really have much to comment on this one. on this page. Have the stable boy who comes running out, takes the horses. Name is Jimmy, 73. So they're inside this inn. Let's see here. The boy nodded and took the horses away. Hardwin Ardenson followed Dugan around the corner and saw the inn was attached to the wall of the inner rung by a tall wooden fence similar to the one at the previous inn. Dugan led them inside. The place was half full of mostly older men, a few about Dugan's age. The younger man pointed at a booth in the back near the kitchen door. Dugan gets some beers. He gets Hardwin a stout. Let's see here. We find out that Dugan has been relieved of command from the order due to Hardwin's actions at the crash site. They just pretty much blamed everything on Dugan and booted him out of the order. And he has, I don't know, he kind of, his like short sword dagger things that he has like hidden under like his cloak, and the way they are, like handles each sticking out from the side, like if they were like looped on his belt like sideways, is kind of what I'm getting from that.
Yeah, they're horizontal across his back.
Yeah, it kind of seems like,
so he could reach behind him and just grab each handle.
Yeah. And it kind of seems like that would be kind of like a characteristic of like a rogue. But I mean, maybe I'm like putting too much D&D into this or whatever. But just the way the weapon sounded, it just kind of had like assassin, rogue. Mm-hmm. It was like where my mind was going. Then it kind of goes into a little bit about the order, you know, training its soldiers with versatile weapons. Talks a little bit about Hardwin's sword being a bastard sword and how it could be wielded when finesse was needed or two hands when you just wanted to go berserk. And how, I mean, sure, some other weapons are good for certain circumstances, but like their weapons could be just as effective by people that know how to use them. So Dugan comes back with the beers. He's kind of beating around the bush about, you know, about Hardwin coming back at a bad time. The girl sits next to Dugan, and then he like unwittingly like puts his arm around her. He doesn't even like kind of realize that she's there, which she seems to, this seems to be like be one of her traits. I mean, I wonder if she's going to be a burglar. She just like seems to like come up to people and just lean into them and like they don't know she's there. It's kind of a cool trait to have.
I'm trying to give the impression of how they just naturally accept her presence and then treat her like a girl that they're familiar with. You know, the way she climbed into Khan's lap and he just treat her like a grandkid, and now, you know, she sits next to Dugan and Dugan puts his arm around her and, you know, holds her close to him like she's his daughter.
Okay. So like she inspires like the need to protect her in some fashion.
Yeah, kinda.
Okay. Huh. I mean, I kinda get that. I think it's the part that he didn't seem to notice her.
Hmm.
I think he's kind of playing with that a little bit.
Okay. It's not that he didn't notice her. It's just more like he
had no objection to her being there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The notice part, I think, is what's fucking with me.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what's doing it for me.
Okay.
So, okay, cool. I'm glad we could figure that out. Or at least figure out something else to try.
I think what we figured out is that I need to figure it out.
Right. But hey, that's what workshop's for, baby. We're here to help each other. Dugan and Hardwin go a little bit into their past. And let's see here. So Dugan was a ranger?
Yeah.
Okay. Then that's when we find out he got expelled from the order. for killing a couple dogs and beating those two young men and attacking the superior officer. And then Hardwin's like, but that was me. And then Dugan's like, yes, I remember, I was there. So Dugan was a scapegoat, or the whipping child, if you will. And then the subject of Barriss. Prelate?
Yeah.
Prelate Barriss? Okay. And like how this guy's like trying to do good, and that Hardwin, and then Dugan's kind of like telling Hardwin, like, yeah, you're right. There is some really messed up stuff going on here. But this dude's like not the worst of it. If anything, he's like still trying to be decent. So I'm looking forward to meeting this prelate Barriss and kind of see how him and Hardwin get along. But it's not going to happen tonight, because we end on Hardwin finally just not beating around the bush, cutting down the bush and going, tell me what's happening, Dugan. Actually, I really enjoyed this section. I think the tensions are developing well. I think the world building, I'm getting a better sense of this world that Hardwin and Dugan and the dead Derwins occupy. And also like the mysteriousness of kind of like what's going on, like with everything changing and what's changing and the mystery of what it is and how it is. I think we're getting a good glimpse into who Hardwin is, kind of like what his dispositions kind of are, and that he is kind of more of a hero type. Yeah, but it's still early yet. A lot remains to be seen. Do you have any questions for me?
No, I don't have any questions for you. We're around the time limit, so we should...
Wrap it up, B! Yeah, I hear you. All right.
All right, so that was Workshop. If you want to see what we workshopped, you can follow along. Find our stuff at patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. Thanks for joining us. Check out our book club. And we got a website, pacificnovelproject.com. We got a Facebook page and a Facebook group, just Facebook Pacific Novel Project, and Twitter Pac Novel Project. Man, did I miss one? We're on the Google Play.
Yeah, indeed.
You can listen to this at Google Play, or you can listen to it at the website, or you can listen to it on Patreon. All a cornucopia of media.
Variety is the spice of life, and we have a variety of places that you can find us. So no excuses. None. I won't have it.
Lots of spice.
All business. Unless I'm talking shit about business.
All right. You heard it. Steve's all business.
Oh, God. Pizza will send out for you.
Lord Business.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.